And now for something completely different. Technical analysis. I'm a big Monty Python fan. And for those of you a little too young for Monty Python, you might want to, you know, do a little search on them in YouTube or the like, and find that much of what they did was silly. The ministry of silly walks and being bombarded with calls for spam at the breakfast table and singing the praises of being a lumberjack in drag. And that's what technical analysis is, folks. It's a lot of silliness. So I'm probably the worst person to introduce you to this topic because I think it's borscht. It's useless. It's not very useful for the prudent long-term investor. Instead, it's more geared toward people who are buying and selling, short-term speculators. And if it works for them, congratulations. I wish them a lot of luck. They're going to need it. But for we prudent long-term investors who are more interested in 3 to 5 to 10 years, not 3 to 5 to 10 minutes, it is not very useful. So hopefully you will find somebody who does say, oh, Payano doesn't know what he's talking about. Here, read this, do this, sign up for my course. It's only $2,995, but in 3 days, you will be making more. Anyway, let's start. Let's start on chapter 7, slide number 1, technical analysis. The fundamental analyst, and that's what we've been doing, fundamental analysis in chapters 4 and 5, says, you're buying companies, not stocks. Think about the stock as a business, right? The technical analyst says, no, you're buying stocks, not companies. Well, that's absurd. The stock represents the company. But yes, there are times when the stock and the company get out of sync, and supposedly technical analysis will help you with that. And this is from The Theory of Investment Value by John Burr Williams. Not a bad book, but certainly read One Up on Wall Street, Random Walk Down Wall Street first. Read The Intelligent Investor from Benjamin Graham, please, please, please. Slide number 2. Let's review. Fundamental analysis is the in-depth study of the financial condition and operating results of a firm. It's a method or methods of evaluating securities by attempting to measure the intrinsic value of the particular stock. We've asked the question, what's it worth? Fundamental analysts study everything from the overall economy and the industry conditions to the financial condition, management of the companies, their competitors, their suppliers, their customers, the industry as a whole. Simply put, the value of a stock is influenced by the performance of the company that issued the stock. And the valuation models from Chapter 4, the ratio analysis from Chapter 5, are examples of fundamental analysis. And as we've said, there are many other models available to you, and you will learn them as you progress in your career, your journey of stock picking. Some of the fundamentals to review: the competitive position of the company. Is it Coke or Pepsi or is it Monster? Don't forget to research their competitors. Peter Lynch says that sometimes he got his best ideas from looking at the company's competitors. He would be at a company presentation and then ask the presenter, well, tell us about your competitors. And that's when they would have to, you know, try to say things that, you know, were true, but not necessarily show that they're not as good as the competitor. And that's when he said he got some of his best ideas. What's the composition and growth in sales and earnings? What are the profit margins, the dynamics of company earnings? The composition and liquidity of corporate resources. What assets are available? What are the debts? How much debt? How much equity? The capitalization of the company. So these are things we've been discussing for quite some time now, right? But there are many investors who don't follow the fundamentals. It is not important to them. What do? They look at technical analysis, the study of the various forces at work in the marketplace and the effect on stock prices. So those who adhere to technical analysis believe that they can predict the future price of a stock by analyzing the behavior of the stock price's history, or the overall stock market as a whole, or various sectors of the market, or any one or many of dozens of what are so-called technical indicators. So simply put, the future price of a stock is influenced by factors other than the company's fundamental future outlook. Now, this is something totally different than what we've been doing so far. We've been looking at the company. The technical analysts are going to say, no, look at the stock. Don't forget the company. And then, of course, there's a somewhere in between, right? It's not all one. So, well, I don't do any technical analysis. I do everything is fundamental analysis. And then there are people who don't do any fundamental analysis. They do all technical analysis. But then, of course, there are some people who mix and match and maybe make a blend of that. So it's not an either-or situation for many individuals. But for some, like me, it is. I'm not interested in technical analysis. What are some of the arguments in favor of technical analysis? Well, stock prices do tend to move in tandem to the stock market as a whole. When the market is rising, most stocks rise with it. And you hear the saying, a rising tide lifts all boats. When the market is falling, though, most stocks are brought down with it. And that's when you say, but when the tide goes out, you can see who's been swimming naked. A rebuttal to this is, look, that's just supply and demand at work. When stocks are in favor, prices rise. When stocks come out of favor, the prices fall. I mean, that's how it works, right? Repeat after me. There has never been a reliable methodology, for predicting the short-term behavior, of the stock market. There are plenty of unreliable methodologies for predicting the short-term behavior of the stock market. You go back in time to the 1990s, and there was a company called Long-Term Capital Management. It was run by two Nobel laureates and the best bond trader in the world, John Merriweather, who we saw way back in Chapter 1. And it was generally believed that they had figured it out. They had figured out a way to predict the short-term behavior of the stock market until they almost brought down the whole system in 1998 when their system completely blew it. And they were given first $6 billion to control $100 billion of securities. And then they reduced that to $3 billion. So they had $3 billion controlling $100 billion. You and I can't do that, dear students. Nobody would allow us to do that. Nobody would let us borrow that much money to play with only $3 billion. We couldn't goof around with $100 billion. But it turned out to be a disaster. And it was, we needed the Federal Reserve Bank actually stepped in to help them. They weren't bailed out. No, they didn't get a bailout. But they were helped by the government, who then went around and said, okay, will you buy this? Will you buy this? Went to the big companies with deep pockets and averted a disaster. And you know what, folks? It was a prequel to the 2008-09 disaster, where companies were doing the exact same thing, but not just one company. They were, with $10 billion, they were controlling $100 billion, which is still really, really dangerous, and it almost destroyed us. So, yeah, there has never been a reliable methodology for predicting the short-term behavior of the stock market. So, what are some of the tools of technical analysis? Well, there are many tools. We'll take a look at just a few, and we're going to give you an assignment that allows you to play with them, and you don't have to know what you're doing, because I don't know what I'm doing, as long as you show that you kind of know what you're doing, or at least you can convince me that you know what you're doing, because I don't know what I'm doing, I'll accept what you did. If that make any sense? It's a bonus assignment, don't worry about it. Momentum trading, the trend is your friend. These people are using the greater fool theory. Buy high, sell higher. Someone out there is a greater fool than I am. And they also use it on the way down, too. If markets are falling, they'll follow the trend. There are these support and resistance levels that we'll take a look at. Supposedly, a support level is a level below which a stock or the market as a whole is unlikely to fall. And then there's a resistance level where the price or the level above which a stock or the market as a whole is unlikely to rise. Sure, you can say it. Doesn't mean it's true, but you can say it, as we'll see. We'll take a look at some examples. And then we have these psychological barriers, Dow 40,000 now, S&P 5,000. For some reason, people, or a stock price at $100, once it hits that, everybody's going to sell. For some reason, zeros get people excited. You know, they remember, some of you weren't born yet, but when we went from 1999 to 2000, that was a huge deal culturally in the culture and the society. But you know, people were still putting on their pants and going into work, and. And then the moving average, one of the most popular and easiest to use, and we'll show the moving average in a presentation on the website in Canvas. So we will refer you to that. And then what I've done here is just put a couple of links. There are thousands, folks, of people who are trying to sell you their services. This guy, Stock Market Mentor, he will show you some of his tools of the trade for free, but then he wants you to sign up for whatever it is, $50 a month or whatever, to get his inside information and teach you how to use technical analysis to buy and sell your way to riches. And I wish you a lot of luck. Now, I'm picking on Dan Fenelon? I'm afraid his name. And then the other guys, I forget the other, these are called the chart guys. So check them out in the face-to-face class. Of course, we would watch it now, but I don't want to really throw it up on the screen now because it's copyrighted material, and I don't want to get them angry at me because they'll think I'm mocking them, which I am, because I don't think it's worth anything. But that's why there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. So let's take a look at the resistance and the support line. Now, this is something I got from Wikipedia. So this is free to use. Thank you very much, Sensatus. And because I'm really bad with graphics. But supposedly, here's a support line. You see, the stock is not supposed to be able to fall, but it did fall below the support line, but not that much below the support line. And then here's the resistance line, and it's not supposed to go above the resistance line, but it kind of did here. Until what happens? You get a breakout, or a breakout to the upside, or a breakout to the downside. So here's one. I actually created this one. Here's the support level here. Here's the resistance level. So it keeps bouncing up the resistance level, bouncing down to the support level, bouncing up the resistance level, bouncing down to the support level until it either breaks out to the downside or breaks up to the upside. So in other words, if it doesn't go up or down, it'll go sideways until it finally goes up or down. I think that's what they're saying. You decide whether you think it's worth anything. Again, my apologies. I'm not a big fan of... Have I said that already? I'm not a big fan of technical analysis. Yeah. Now, here's the moving average. Now, what is a moving average? Well, you go back 50 days, right? You go back 50 days and you add up all the prices and divide by 50, and that gives you the average price. And so what they do every day is they go back 50 days and give you the average price. So what does it do? What does it do? Here's the purple or lavender or whatever it is. Those are the prices. Now you see they're pretty jagged. But by going back 50 days and getting the average, you smooth out the prices. And then we do the same with the 200-day. And that's the bright purple. I'm not sure. The 50-day moving average is brown. And then what do you call this? Magenta, I guess. So the 200-day moving average goes back 200 days every day and then goes back 200 days. And what you wind up with is a much smoother graph. You see? So now here's the belief. Whether or not it's true or not, I don't believe it, but I don't know where the research is or how you determine that going into the future, but this is what people believe. When the 50-day goes below the 200-day, that's called the death cross. It's an inflection point, the cross, the death cross. And that's supposedly bad, right? It's bad for the stock. But when the 50-day goes above the 200-day, well, that's the golden cross. That's a bullish sign. And that's supposedly a fabulous sign for the stock. Now, there are countless examples where this is true, and there are countless examples where it's not true. You might as well just flip a coin, in my humble opinion. But some people will say, well, wait a minute. You should be using the 15-day and the 50-day, or the 10-day and the 20-day. I don't know why, but that's what they say. So this is your assignment, by the way. It's a bonus assignment. And as I said, there's a presentation to show you how to do this. I use Yahoo. Most of the places that used to give it to you for free are now not giving it to you, the technical analysis. They want you to sign up. So Yahoo is one of the last ones. If you can find any that are better, that are free, please let me know. And so you're going to do this with a stock of your choice. I think I ask you to use Citigroup or Verizon or a couple other companies. Some of them are very boring. They don't cross very often. And that's why some traders say, well, it's too long. 50-day and 200-day is too long. You have to do the 15-day and the 30-day, or the 15-day and the 20-day, or the 15-day and the 15-day and the 50-day. But you decide. But the death cross is when the shorter one goes below the longer one. In this case, the 50-day goes below the 200-day. And I guess that was a decent time to sell. You missed up this part, but then you missed this bottom here. But then on the way back up, by the time the 50-day had gone above the 200-day, stock had recovered quite a bit, but still had plenty of upside going to it. So again, you decide. And this is the one where you're going to show me and tell me that you know what you're doing, even though you don't. And since I don't know what I'm doing, it'll be very easy for you to convince me that you know what you're doing, even though you don't. But who knows? Could a $400,000, $500,000 a year job plus bonuses on Wall Street be in your future as a technical analyst? I don't know. We'll see. All you got to do is convince people you know what you're doing. And then when it doesn't work, you'll tell them why it didn't work and why it's going to work the next time. Right. Okay. The Dow theory is one of the more historically popular price movement technical theories. It was actually originally proposed by Charles Dow, who was one of the co-founders of the Wall Street Journal and the creator of the Dow Jones Industrial Average back in 1896. Unfortunately, he died before he finished it. So it had to be finished by other people, and other people have finished it in different ways. And people have tried to explain it to me, and I kind of just shrug my shoulders and say, well, in other words, what you're saying is that if the market doesn't go up or down, it will go sideways. Is that what you're saying? I think that's what they're saying. The Dow theory tries to identify three forces: a primary direction or trend, a secondary reaction or trend, and then daily fluctuations. And by watching the changes in the primary and secondary directions of the indices, you are supposed to be able to determine the overall direction of the market. And if anybody can explain it to me, please, I would really love to understand how it works or doesn't work. More doesn't work. The next, why isn't it going to the next slide? There it goes. The relative strength. This is a measure of the performance of one investment relative to another or to the market as a whole. Now, Valueline has a relative strength indicator. The company that really pushed this is called Investors Business Daily. It was started by a big technical analyst fan, O'Neill was his name, William O'Neill, who actually co-founded Investors Business Daily, which is based in Los Angeles and was supposed to be a competitor to the Wall Street Journal. Not Journal. It never really got that popular, although we used to have it at the company I started working at. And there were actually some pretty good articles in there. But the stuff on technical analysis, and there was a lot of technical analysis in there, I was never really big a fan of. I just thought, well, what does this mean? I don't understand. Why is this? Where's the research that shows that this is actually going to work in the past and the future? But that's one of the things you'll see in the value line, the relative strength. How is it relative to the market as a whole and to other investments? The market volume. Traders and speculators look at the market volume. How many shares are trading in the overall market or the individual stocks that they're interested in? And supposedly, if it's a heavy volume with prices rising, that's a great sign. Yippee, 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 yippee. If it's low volume with prices falling, well, that's okay. Okay, it's okay. Prices went down, but it's low volume, so don't worry. However, if it's heavy volume with prices falling, well, oh, that's bad. And then low volume with prices rising is also very bad. Yeah. Okay. What about the breadth of the market? Not the respiration, but what's called the advance decline ratio. And people look at this, I guess, as a day-to-day indicator. How many stocks went up? How many went down? When the mood of investors is bullish, the advance decline ratio should rise, meaning that advancing issues should outnumber declining issues. When the mood of investors is bearish, the advance decline ratio should fall. Declining issues will outnumber advancing issues. So I'm trying to think of a way that you would actually use this to make investment decisions. And I guess if you're a short-term day trading kind of person, you might say, ooh, the advanced decline ratio is very bullish. So maybe tomorrow the stock market's going to go up. So maybe I'll buy some S&P 500 ETFs and then sell them tomorrow after the market goes up. Again, short-term trading, not something that we recommend, not something that we prudent long-term investors are interested in. But if you're a short-term trader, speculator, I wish you a lot of luck, and this might be something you'd be interested in. But don't you dare say I told you to do it. Remember, I told you not to do it. And then the tick. Not something I like to think about, are ticks. Luckily, San Diego, we don't have too many ticks. The insect ticks. There used to be a ticker tape. You see this in old movies. Which way is the market going? Up or down? Is it an uptick or a downtick? What's going on at the opening of the market? Is it going up? What's the opening tick? Bullish going up? Or is it bearish going down, a downtick? And what's the closing tick when the market closed? How were things going? And again, if you're a short-term trader, this may be of interest to you. I certainly hope not, but that's up to you. Now, this is something that's actually useful, in my humble opinion, not for trading or speculating or investing, but it's something to help us emotionally, and that's short interest. The number of stocks sold short in the market at any given time. The more stocks are sold short, the more investors believe the market will fall or an individual stock will fall. For some reason, short investors are somehow considered more sophisticated and are therefore supposed to know when the market will fall. Now, we'll deal with short selling in detail at the end of our journey together. Don't do it. It's dangerous. Peter Lynch says don't do it. But we're not going to discuss the mechanics. All we need to know about short selling is that we're trying to knock down the price. We're always interested, hey, we want to see the price go up. But no, short sellers want the price to go down. So what happens? There is a downturn in the market, and then there's a huge downturn. So what's going on? Short-term traders, speculators using shorting techniques are knocking down the prices. But it's like a spring. They're pushing down on a spring. When large numbers of investors sell short, eventually they must buy the shares back. And this creates a pent-up demand for stocks. It creates a pent-up demand for a buying spree. And you might have heard about this last year, and what was it, 2021, in the beginning of 2021, with the shorting of AMC and GameStop, and there was a short squeeze because people started buying, and if the price goes up, short sellers start losing a lot of money. Remember, they're betting the price goes down. If the price goes up, they get in a terrible situation. It's called a short squeeze. And so when the market falls precipitously and people say, Frank, what do we do? What do we do? I say, oh, just wait a few days. I say, what? Just wait a few days. And then all of a sudden, bingo, it jumps up and they go, oh, why did that happen? I say, well, because the short sellers had to cover their positions. They had to buy back the shares, and it's like that. I like the compressed spring idea. You're pushing down, and eventually, bingo, it's got to jump back up again. So this is something that actually can help you emotionally. Not going to help you make decisions for the long term, in my humble opinion. August of 2002. This was my first major bear market as a professional. I had lived through 87 and didn't panic then, but August of 2002, it had been 3 years where the market had been down. I mean, it was just water torture, just down and down and down. Not, you know, nothing really, except for the NASDAQ, except for the dot bomb stocks. And in August of 2002, it had been reported that on the New York Stock Exchange, the largest number of shares had been sold short in the history of the New York Stock Exchange. And so I'm thinking, okay, we're near the end. I don't know when it's going to happen, but we're near the end, because these people have to buy back those shares. And one of the other brokers said, oh, yeah, we're close to the end. And so he had been in the industry for a lot longer. And sure enough, the bottom hit October of 2002. You didn't know it at the time, but yeah. So realize that when the market drops precipitously, there's often a jump back up again when the short squeeze happens. Okay, contrarian opinion is one of those technical analysts and indicators that's actually useful, in my humble opinion. Again, not for a short-term trading technique, but for something that helps us understand the markets as a whole and to keep a long-term perspective. This is the theory that if people are very optimistic, that's a predictor of falling prices. Huh? It happens all the time. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Is it too late to get in? Yeah. we're gonna have a downturn. Oh, well, it's going to happen. And if people are very pessimistic, ooh, is it too late to get out? That's a predictor of rising prices. Therefore, we should all walk around as bearish as possible, and that will make the market rise. Oh, man, the world's going to, it's terrible. No, it doesn't work that way. But just realize it'll help you, at least I think so, emotionally. When you realize people are euphoric for kleptocurrencies or NFPs or Ds or Gs or whatever they are, then we're going to get hammered. And some of those stocks that are the disruptors, the high-flying, they have gotten hit pretty hard, haven't they? Yeah. And then when people are, oh, man, is it too late to get out? That's usually a sign, yeah, next couple of years should be pretty good. We covered the contrarian strategy already in investment strategies. You buy when others are selling. You sell when others are buying. But the problem is the market historically has gone up 3 times more often than it goes down. So it's something that, Howard Marks. Says it's not a steady business. You have to be willing to sit on your bum and just wait for those times when there's blood in the streets, and that's when you jump in. So for most of us, it's not that useful. $50 a month, $100 a month. Oh well, you know, that's what we do. Okay, so now let's take a look. Let's take a look at odd lot trading. We probably should just get rid of this slide, you know, because this is the theory based on the idea that small investors tend to buy and sell in odd lots. If you remember an odd lot, less than 100 shares, And the theory, even though there's not much research to back it up, and I don't know who came up with it, the best thing to do is what is the opposite of what small investors are doing. Supposedly, small investors are buying in odd lots, and they are notorious for getting into the market at the top of a bull market. So if odd lot trading rises, it supposedly means that more and more small investors are entering the market, and that's supposed to be a bad sign. I don't agree. I don't know where they came up with this idea. And as we've seen, technology has basically made odd lot trading commonplace. You want 17 shares, you buy 17 shares. You don't have to worry about some guy on the exchange yelling out 17 shares at 25. It doesn't happen anymore. They just type it in, or you type it in, and it goes through their system, and boom, it matches up with somebody who wants to sell 17 shares. So this one we should probably get rid of it, right? But just remember that there are people who believe this stuff. And then the next one, charting. Finally, we're going to take a look at charting, which is the activity of charting price behavior and other market information, and then using the patterns that these charts form to make investment decisions. There are several different types of charts, the open, high, low, close charts, the candlestick charts. Actually, your spreadsheet can make these things. You set up your spreadsheet in such a way that you have the open, high, low, close prices of a stock, and you can download them easily from the internet, or if you have a brokerage account, they usually will give it to you. And then you can create these charts, and then you can decide whether you can use these charts to predict the future behavior of an individual stock or the market as a whole. You know, if you're tracking the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ or the Russell 2000 or whatever. There are many different chart formations, resistance and support levels, which we've already discussed, and then the breakout, the head and shoulders, the most famous one, triangles and wedges, flags and pennants and cups and handles, and I hear that reading tea leaves while howling at the full moon works great too. Well, it's about as good as reading squiggles on a computer screen, in my humble opinion. But again, somebody wants to sell you a 3-day course which will make you the famed trader, which will, don't worry about burning your credit card for $3,995, because you're going to pay off that credit card and all the other credit cards that you have, and you're going to be living the lifestyle that you deserve. Look, folks, I've heard these people. They're very good at what they do. They don't have any ethics whatsoever. They're crooks, but they are persuasive. And one of my clients actually asked me to come to one of these two-hour... it's actually a sales presentation, but they say it's an free information session. And basically all I did for 2 hours was tell people they need to sign up, and they didn't get a chance. You didn't have it. No, you couldn't ask any questions. He didn't allow any questions. He just said, we have people at the back of the room. All you got to do is get up and walk back and talk to them. And the people in the back of the room would sign up, the suckers who signed up. You never had a chance to ask a single question. I told her, I said, these people are scam artists. Don't do this. But she didn't, thankfully. That was a long time ago. But they're still out there. Okay, so let's take a look at the first charting example. These are candlestick charts. Now, the open ones, or the green ones in this case, are the black ones, are the pinkish ones here. When it's open or green, that means that the stock price closed higher than it opened. So here's the open, the low for the day, there's the high for the day, and it closed higher than it opened. So that's a bullish candlestick. Okay, that's what they tell me. A bearish candlestick is the opposite. It opened higher than it closed. And again, there's the low and the high. So this chart right here, if the close is higher than the open, that is supposedly a bullish candlestick. If the close is lower than the open, that is supposedly a bearish candlestick. At least that's what they tell me, right? So here we see two bearish candlesticks, and then some bullish, with a bearish one snuck in, and then some bearish ones where the price went down, and then some bullish where the price went up. So in the chart at left, first the candlesticks are telling us that the price went up here, and then the price went down, and then the price went up again. Is this insightful analysis or what? Yes, we see that the price goes up and down. And when people say, what do you think the market's going to do, Frank? I say, well, the market will go up and down. And they say, well, I knew that. I say, well, why'd you ask me? Well, look, I'm just channeling J.P. Morgan. Yeah, that J.P. Morgan. John Pierpont Morgan, when they asked him, Mr. Morgan, what's the market going to do? He said the market will fluctuate. Yeah. So, short term, we know that the price movements are random. In the long term, no, failure is not an option. The next slide shows some of the individual, very popular candlestick chart formation. This is a dark cloud cover. And this is a bearish engulfing pattern. And this is harame, which I'm not sure how you say it. I'm not sure. It sounds like Japanese. I don't know what it is. But I did my research. I actually looked it up on the internet, so it must be true, right? The dark cloud cover is very, very bad. But the bearish engulfing pattern is even worse. And harami is the absolute worst. I don't know. It's got to be true, right? Right? I don't know. But again, this is for somebody who's making a decision for the next day, I guess. Is that what you figure? I can't figure it out, folks. I don't. That's why you probably shouldn't be listening to me about technical knowledge. You should be listening to somebody else who actually believes this borscht. Because why? Where's the research that shows this? Where's the when we know it's already been shown that price movements are random in the short term. Okay. Here is the most famous one. And this, when I took the Series 7 in 1998, this is the only question out of what, 240 questions, that they asked about technical analysis. And all I really had to do was recognize the name. This is a head and shoulder chart. So here's the left shoulder, and then there's the head, and then there's the right shoulder, there's the neckline, and then supposedly this is bad, I think. I think head and shoulder is bad. Or maybe it's good. You look it up. All right? Look it up and you tell me if it's good or bad. In fact, I've seen people talk about or seen written about inverted head and shoulders, which I guess since the head and shoulder is bad, I guess an inverted head and shoulder is good. I don't know. My apologies. Here's the cup and handle. Now, this one was created by the William O'Neill I talked about, the Investor's Business Daily. And it's supposedly a bullish indicator. Now, why is this? Maybe this makes sense to you. Think about logic here. The stock price was high and then fell on the hard times and then came back up again. Well, when it gets back to the point where it was, what we see is people, or supposedly, we see people selling because of that loss aversion phenomenon we talked about. They bought up here, and now it's down here, and then they got back to where they bought it from, and now they're going to sell. So they, hey, I didn't make a loss. I came out even. And so the handle here is the people selling who got washed out or whatever you want to call it. You know, they bought up here, or maybe they bought up there. They're waiting for it to get back up to 61 or 62. But say they bought at 59, and then it's back to 59. So, okay, I'll sell. So I didn't make a loss. And so Mr. O'Neill posited, theorized, that this is a good sign because now these people are gone, and now new investors will take the stock to new heights. Yeah. I want you to decide if you believe this is useful because I don't. And then there are other assorted charts, flags and pennants and Bollinger Bands. And a flag is good and a pennant is bad, right? Or maybe it's the other way around. Here's the simple moving average with Bollinger Bands. And you know, folks, I haven't actually gotten around to reading about what Bollinger Bands do and what they're supposed to be useful for. So if anybody figures it out, please tell me. Please. This is from a random walk down Wall Street where Professor Burton Malkiel does a much better job of skewering the technical analysis, but he also skewers the fundamental analysis, and he skewers the efficient market theorist. So I love it when somebody, you know, disparages and insults everyone. I mean, equal opportunity insulter. So this is an actual quote from a technical analyst. This is 1970s, right? The market's rise after a period of reaccumulation is a bullish sign. Nevertheless, fulcrum characteristics are not yet clearly present, and a resistance area exists 40 points higher in the Dow. So it is clearly premature to say the next leg of the bull market is up. If, in the coming weeks, a test of the lows holds and the market breaks out of its flag, a further rise would be indicated. Should the lows be violated, a continuation of the intermediate-term downward trend is called for. In view of the current situation, it is a distinct possibility that traders will sit in the wings awaiting a clearer delineation of the trend, and the market will move in a narrow trading range. Now, what did this guy just say? I think he said, if the market does not go up or down, it will remain unchanged. Right. And he's absolutely right. If the market doesn't go up or down, it'll go sideways. Please read A Random Walk Down Wall Street. Now, finally, one more time, and we're going to do it again sometime in the future. Think about it, folks. The industry needs you. They need more women. We need more bilingual, ex-military, they love veterans, minorities. The industry is in desperate need of professionals, and they need diversity. They know this. They're not stupid. They see, if you're here in San Diego, if you're in the South Bay and you have a bank or an insurance company or a brokerage firm, and you don't have somebody speak Spanish, poof, you're losing business. If you're out in East County, you don't have somebody speaks Arabic, you're losing business. And throughout the county, you don't have somebody who speaks Tagalog that you can call upon to help folks from the Philippines. You're losing business. And so it's not just, you know, touchy-feely, trying to kumbaya kind of stuff. This is business. We need you. And I love it. What can I say? You know, it's not perfect. Nothing is. But it's a great career, I think. So I hope that you will consider it. And there are, as we said, there are many different positions in the industry, but normally people start off as a registered representative and then they become the registered investment advisor, basically the same thing, stockbroker. They don't like that term anymore, stockbroker, but I call myself a financial representative. That's good enough for me. But the legal term is registered representative. They're going to do a background check, no shenanigans with other people's money. You must take the very difficult Series 7. Now, it's not impossible, and a lot of people, they don't pass them the first time because they didn't respect it. We tell people, you have to know everything. You have to pass the test with 70%, but here's the trick. You can't just key on the parts that you like and hope that you escape from the other parts. There are basically 8 exams in the exam. You don't see this. You just see the questions come at you. But that every, there's stocks and there's mutual funds and there's bonds. The ones that trip people up are the options and the shorting and the buying on margin, which we'll discuss, you know, later on. And you'll see why they're very tricky, because if you zig when you should have zagged, you get it wrong. And so you have to pass every one of those mini exams inside the big exam with a 70%. Yeah. And so people who often fail it the first time, they pass it the second time because they realize, okay, I didn't understand how to do margin. The Series 63 is actually pretty straightforward. So the Series 7, it takes 6 hours, 3 hours in the morning, and then you get an hour for lunch, 3 hours in the afternoon. And it takes about 2 months of studying, 1 to 2 hours a day. We had one student who studied for, I think, 2 or 3 weeks and passed it. He just, but that's all he did, you know, 7, 8 hours a day he studied. Series 63 takes 2 to 4 weeks of studying, an hour a day. You must be sponsored by a brokerage firm. Many brokerage firms are reticent to hire somebody until they know that they can pass the Series 7 because they wind up not passing and then they have to either part ways or find something else for them to do. For this reason, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority now offers the SIE, Securities Industries Essentials Exam. It's a whole lot cheaper. The Series 7 costs several hundred dollars to take. The SIE takes, I think, $60 or $80. And you don't have to be sponsored. If you pass this exam, the industry is going to come a calling. they're going to start knocking on your door, sending you stuff, giving you calls. So think about it, folks. Think about it. It's a great job, in my humble opinion. And plus, there's insurance, and then there's banking, and then there's mortgage broking, and there's all, there's a, the financial industry is huge, folks. There's a position for you. We need you. Oh, oh. We have finished our long march. We have gone through stocks, and oh my goodness, is this world of stocks exciting and sexy and risky, and there's so much to know. And so what I'm going to ask you to do, and I know it might sound like, all right, you're out of your mind, but I'm going to ask you to go back to chapter 3 and start all over again. Study this material over and over again until you see it in your sleep, in your dreams, and can explain it to other individuals, because you are now the investment guru for your friends and family and coworkers, and we are so proud of you. Now, when we come back, after exam number 3, next week, bonds. Boring bonds, stodgy bonds, reliable bonds. Thank you so much for being in our class, dear students. We are so proud of you. You are awesome.